The commentary on this podcast is not intended to serve as or replace professional, legal, financial, or medical advice. While the insights may have wide applicability, listeners should consult with a licensed or certified professional in your state to obtain advice with respect to your particular case.
Have you ever wondered how divorce can impact your financial future far beyond just dividing your assets? I mean, are you prepared for the unexpected costs of divorce? Do you know what they are? Do you know how to protect your financial well-being for the long term? That's really a huge question. Divorce is more than just an emotional roller coaster. It's a significant financial transition that demands careful planning and consideration. Often, the elements of finance and divorce, such as asset division, long-term impacts on finances, and considerations for your future needs, they're all overlooked in the rush to finalize the separation. This is Divorced and Determined AF, the show that supports women with the information that you need to know before, during, and beyond divorce. My name is Jamie Milam, and I am determined to empower you to make informed decisions and take aligned action so that you can live the life you deserve. And today, we're diving into the intricacies of managing financial assets and liabilities during a divorce. And we're going to provide insights and strategies to help you navigate these turbulent waters with greater confidence and foresight. Amongst everything else that you're having to filter through during this divorce, you might be asking, what are the key considerations and financial strategies for women, especially women, navigating through divorce to ensure their long-term financial stability? Well, helping me with that today is Jessica Garcia. She's a certified divorce financial analyst and a divorce coach. And not only has she gone through a divorce herself, but she also holds 22 years experience working in the financial industry prior to her current role here in the divorce sector. She has a passion for helping women take steps to secure an informed and fair financial settlement, and it really shows in her commitment to providing financial clarity and peace of mind during this challenging time. So why don't we go ahead and just dive right in? Divorce is an overwhelming process that most of us did not know how to navigate until we were in the thick of it, which can cost us a lot more time, money, and energy than necessary. Divorced and Determined AF hopes to change that. I'm your host, Jamie Milam. I'm a realtor and a certified divorce specialist who not only works with divorcing couples when selling their home, but I am also divorced, and I know firsthand how much having thorough resources would positively impact women for years to come. I'm bringing together fellow divorcees and experts working in the field to talk about this private taboo topic, all with the goal to help you feel prepared, educated, assured, confident, and empowered to make informed decisions related to your divorce journey. So whether you're just now considering a divorce, in the midst of it, or are now navigating a new norm and are determined AF to do it your way, this is your safe space. You deserve it. This is such a hot topic when it comes to divorce, if not one of the biggest ones aside from aspects of co-parenting and just custody issues, right? And I think too often we overlook the longer term financial implications, which is probably just a byproduct of the overwhelm, right? That so many women feel when they're preparing for divorce, and oftentimes they just want to be done with it, right? They just want it to be over with. And we don't really put a lot of thought into, outside of just right now dividing assets, what is that longer term effect going to be on us? So can we just start with the basics here? Because when I think of the most common financial assets that are typically divided in a divorce, what immediately comes to mind first and foremost for me is the marital home. And then, of course, checking and savings accounts, retirement accounts like your 401k, your IRA, maybe cash value life insurance policies, and then investments like stocks and bonds and whatnot. Am I missing anything right off the top, just so we can be clear for the audience today?
Well, that's an excellent question, Jamie. And I'm so happy to be here to have an opportunity to talk about it, because you're so right. Many people, when they're living through this process of divorce, are focused on now and focused on the short term. And even their legal counsel is focused on the short term. not a lot of people are thinking about the long-term implications of the decisions they're contemplating. And there are various factors that come into play. Your age, your ability to earn income. Have you been earning income? Are you going to have to start to figure that out? Mm-hmm. And so those factors come into play when you're thinking about the division of your assets. Yes, the marital home is one of the biggest assets that a couple may have, as well as retirement accounts. So those tend to be the biggest. And so there are tax implications that may be involved depending on how they're divided. Checking and savings accounts, of course, collections of things like jewelry collections or guitars, or I've seen watches. Different types of collections might have a big value. And so it becomes so important to think about what is important to you. What are your goals and priorities? What is your time horizon for retirement? What is your time horizon for being able to recoup yourself financially, being able to create a source of income if you don't already have one? So the answer varies with each person. And that's the importance of having a CDFA or a certified divorce financial analyst that can help you think through not just the short term, but also the long term implications of your decisions. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So you briefly did mention that there are some potential tax implications. Aside from the sale of your house, which has the potential for capital gains tax, and then the penalty taxes even for withdrawing from your retirement accounts, are there other financial assets that we might be dividing that have tax implications, whether you need to withdraw them to have cash on hand or to liquidate them entirely? You know, are those the only ones that have tax implications, or are there others that fall into that category?
Oh, there's a long list. And oh. I wouldn't want to skip over retirement accounts, because that tends to be very important. For example, if you're getting $300,000 in a retirement account, it's not the same as getting $300,000 from a non-retirement account. So the tax implications are so relevant because you're not getting an equal value. So that is one thing to think about with retirement accounts. But another asset that comes to mind when it comes to tax implications is investment real estate. And that's because if you take investment real estate on your side of the equation, if you decide to sell it, you've got to recoup depreciation. You're probably going to have to pay a big tax bill. And so doing that analysis is also important. And you mentioned opportunity costs. That is something that you want to think about, because when you think about the marital estate, think of it as a pie. And in North Carolina, it's an equitable property state, which means fair, not necessarily equal. Mm-hmm. And so we want to make sure that we do assess that if you're getting a piece of real estate that is for investment purposes or has been, what are you looking at down the road as an example?
When you think about the retirement versus non-retirement accounts, which to me immediately says what is liquidable, that is, you know, without as many tax implications, right? We can liquidate this and have easier access to cash on hand. You know, does that include your own retirement accounts? Like, would you want to offset and give up your own retirement account, or would you want to keep that?
Every marriage is different, so every divorce is different.
Sure.
And so the answer, I could have 10 couples in front of me and give you 10 different answers. Add to that, that what did you bring to the marriage? If there was a retirement account that you had before marriage, chances are it's yours. You don't have to share that if you haven't contributed to it in the marriage. It's just been parked there. But it is possible that depending on what you want, and meaning, you know, what assets, what part of the marital estate do you want? It could very well be that you've got to share some of your retirement accounts, for example. So if you're wanting to keep the marital home, and you owe your soon-to-be ex-spouse their share of the equity, well, we've got to figure out, where is that going to come from?
Right.
And there are different factors that come into play. Can you qualify for refinancing? Do you want to refinance? Can you get an equity line? Are you going to pay it out of your retirement? What are you giving up to get this equity? So
yeah, Yeah, and that's exactly something that we've covered back in episode 55, talking about different buyout options, how we're going to handle that. I mean, it's great and all if we think that we can or that we want to or we have the desire to. Right. But if you have a lot of questions, the good news is that you can write these down and then take them step by step because, you know, when it comes to the retirement accounts, you know, or even investment properties, if you've been working with your CPA, as you've been filing your taxes, if you have investment properties, you've probably been made aware at some point some of the tax implications that come with them. But they can easily be forgotten, especially when we are knee deep in the throes of negotiations and we're just looking at like, how do we manage right now? And some of those even change when you go from being married to being single, such as the capital gains tax, right? So that changes when it comes to real estate.
And that's a good scenario because you can't imagine the number of women I've spoken to who have never signed a tax return. They are not privy to the information. So we can assume that everyone is informed, but the reality may be otherwise.
That's a very good point. There's so much truth in that as well. But then I also think of other implications, right? Because whether it's a stay-at-home mom or even a self-employed individual, there's these other financial implications that we don't automatically think of. And just a fast example, like I grossly underestimated how much my health insurance would go up. I did not investigate how much that was going to cost as a self-employed because I was able to stay on my husband's insurance for about 8 more months of the year. So was I thinking about going getting health insurance quotes in that moment? Absolutely not. And even since the divorce has been finalized, my premiums have continued to go up. So, you know, when we think about other aspects, not just like tax implications, are there other long-term implications that you've experienced when working with women that maybe we want to start to think about that most of us probably wouldn't be thinking of in the thick of this?
Well, I think financial literacy is so important. And it's a good thing to have knowledge about finances overall. I find that as women, there have been roles that have developed in a marriage that one is the breadwinner, one is the raises the family and takes care of the home. And so that's not good or bad. It's just very factual. And so when it comes to suddenly you're blindsided by divorce, or maybe it's by choice, I find that getting a grasp of the elements that make up your financial picture is crucial. And those are income, expenses, assets, and liabilities. And then within those, you want to ensure you've got documentation for all those. You want to ensure that you're thinking about these that people forget. Insurance, travel. People forget about travel, whether it's vacation travel, your kids' sports travel, but it's just overlooked. Eating out, that's a big number for a lot of families just because everyone's so busy. And so it's good to keep that in mind. And then the final one is gifts. Gifts to your kids, gifts to your friends, family, gifts to the teachers at the end of the year. And so getting a true representation of what you need in your monthly cash flow is important.
Yeah. And when you say insurance, I think another aspect that can be forgotten, especially if you choose to keep the house, is your homeowner's insurance, your auto insurance. If you have been as a household, all of your vehicles have been together, you probably have like a bundled rate that is discounted. And so now when you take your car insurance and now you put it into your own name and you have only your vehicle, that insurance cost might go up as well. Same with if it was bundled with home and auto and then it's dismantled, that can make the insurance premiums go up. So even if you've got the documentation for what it is currently, these are still the numbers that we can be proactive about to reach out and say, what would this quote be, you know, so that I would know what I would be looking at going forward. Because that is such a huge, it is a big change. You know, I even tell people too, some of those other implications is thinking about what it's going to cost you to manage your home on your own, you know?
Well, the reality is that income that provided for one household will now provide for two. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, auto insurance is going to change. Your cell phone is going to change. You might have to have two Netflix accounts now, for example.
Right.
But also, think of it this way. I like to separate how you think of expenses. And that would be under household expenses and personal expenses. Because your household expenses tend to be a fixed number. They tend to be numbers that it's hard to shift when money is not quite what you expect it to be. Whereas your personal expenses are more variable, are things like getting your hair cut, entertainment, other things that are equally important, but you can manage better. And so what I like to do with clients is let's figure out what your lifestyle analysis is. What have you been spending as a family? And let's come up with some calculations and some negotiation scenarios based on that. But then once the dust settles, what's the reality? And what do we have to go back and see? All right, household plus personal expenses equal X minus Y, whatever support I'm getting, whatever income I have from my job. And what's left over is your gap. Mm-hmm. Ideally, there's no gap. You're able to have a surplus and put it in savings.
Yeah, you know, I can't help but as you're saying that, I visualize, you know, kind of like strategy 1, 2, 3. And, you know, when I work with a seller and we're looking at potential list prices and what it may actually sell for, right? Sure, here's what we would like to get out of it. But if the buyer market brings us something different, here's a range that I feel confident that we would sell within. Yeah. And here's what your net proceeds looks like, whether it's option 1, 2, or 3. And so if we were at worst case scenario, is this something that you can live with? Because at the end of the day, in a divorce, we should have in the back of our mind that we are going to have some lifestyle changes, you know? Absolutely. And so I think it's helpful to, when it comes to removing some of the emotion aspect out of the negotiation process, if we did do that lifestyle analysis and said, okay, here's what we have now. Now let's look at this and say, like, realistically, how often can we cut back eating out? Do we need to get our nails done every week, or can you find somebody else where they can last longer or whatever, right? You know, like just looking at, okay, where would I feel comfortable if we ended up here at the bottom line? And that way it's not this massive shock throughout the negotiation process. And so that you can still say, okay, well, right now these numbers are still supporting higher than my worst case scenario. And so sometimes I feel like that helps bring us peace in that process if we kind of know these different strategies. And I do want to circle back to a phrase that we said earlier. So opportunity costs, right? And what I mean by this is pretty much by its very basic like definition, because an opportunity cost, taking us back to like high school days, right? And I like to think of it as high school, not finance, because I will probably blank out when I think of it as a financial conversation.
But to hear what you think of. Yeah.
Well, and it's, you know, it's the money or the benefit that's lost by not selecting a particular option during a decision-making process. Yeah. And so I want to give us an example really quick, because this specific situation was a huge motivating and inspiration factor for me to put together the resource center over at Peace of Mind, because we see it too often. We see that women will think, especially in the way that the real estate market is today, like, okay, well, if I can't stay in my house, then where am I going to go? Like, I can't afford that. And so, you know, they want to keep the house, but also they want to have access to some of the retirement funds that husband has been putting away, because maybe they've been a stay-at-home mom, or maybe they have contributed a lot less income over the years because maybe they were a stay-at-home mom and then got back into the workforce, right? So their thought process of like what equitable is might be different than what the state might think of. However, if you choose to keep the house, just because you have all that equity doesn't necessarily mean you have access to it. And so that's where I kind of wanted to come back into this opportunity cost with you to say, everybody has different individual needs, of course, but what are some of those opportunity costs that you start to walk clients through to help them give that consideration?
So the math doesn't lie. So I always rely on the numbers to sort of bring those to the surface. And that is what is so key, because you mentioned it already. It's the business of divorce versus the emotions of divorce. And so it becomes about, what are your goals and priorities? What's most important to you? And if staying in the marital home is most important to you, then we've got to go down a list of questions. And the biggest one being, yes, what are you giving up to stay in the marital home? Can you afford it? Is that something that you can do? I can't tell you how many realtors have shared with me throughout the years of a client they've been working with who wanted to keep the marital home, did not negotiate to sell the home as part of the settlement, and 12, 18 months later is now selling because their lifestyle has changed, because they don't want the upkeep. They don't want to deal with that. They're out traveling or socializing with their friends. And so that is such an important question to ask, to think ahead. So first, what are my goals and priorities? Where do I envision myself after divorce? What might this look like? And is this still the best situation? Oftentimes as mothers, we think about, oh, our children grew up there. This is the only home they've known. But it may be overstated sometimes, but children are resilient. And so what is important to us is to think about outside the box type scenarios. Well, maybe I do go into some temporary housing, rent a house for 12 months before I decide. I've had clients that have done nesting and somebody lives away from the home. They alternate weeks. So there's different ways to figure this out that you don't have to rush into a decision. But more than anything, protect yourself. Be sure you're getting the advice that's necessary to, so that you're not just taking an asset and not knowing what you're going to do with it, not understanding that you say you want to keep it, but you've got to refinance in 12 months or you have to sell it. Well, that's an important caveat to understand. And so there are so many opportunity costs to be looked at based on the makeup of the marital estate. And so if you're keeping the marital home, but you're giving up retirement money and, you know, you've got a career and you're in your early 30s, and that might be okay because time horizon is such an important factor. And so if you were asking me a question at age 35, my answer with the same scenario might be different if you were 55. So it's important to consider so many different layers of factors when you look at opportunity costs, for sure. Never mind the fact that this cookie jar that you've been filling as a couple, whether you're both contributing financially or not, because somebody's keeping the house in order, keeping the kids and doing all that. So you're contributing in a different way. And what I find is that cookie jar has been filling up and now it's got to be divided. And one of you is very uncomfortable with dividing that cookie jar. And so they want to make it as hard as possible. And so being informed to say, well, what do I need from that? Or what can I build on my own later? Or do I prefer monthly support? Do I want a lump sum distribution so I don't have to deal with this anymore? I mean, there's just so many things to think about. And it's already tumultuous, the situation with the change, no?
Yeah, but it's like you said, it's so much better to take the time to do this proactively rather than waiting till everything's signed on the dotted line, where we can't change anything other than the child support, which is really only if there's been massive financial change of circumstance. To go back to that point, yeah, the stat is 67% of people who keep their marital home in a divorce will actually end up selling it within 2 to 3 years after the divorce is finalized.
Interesting, yeah.
And you're exactly right. Lifestyle might change. You know, you start to realize, gosh, I don't want to clean this whole thing. Or, you know, for me, I knew going into my divorce that I did want to keep my home so that my son could finish out high school in the same district. Same thing as most women. I want to have less disruption for him as possible. But also knowing that probably after high school, I would be fine to sell it. And for me, the equity made sense. And so it's one of those things that if I have to pay capital gains tax, which I will, which I wouldn't have had to pay likely had we sold it while we were married, but the equity that I'll receive versus what I have to pay in taxes is it makes it very much worthwhile, right? Yeah. So it's one of those things that you do have to weigh that out, because if you have little equity, but you can afford the monthly payments, it might be worth giving up some of the other assets that you would owe them, you know, to rebalance it. I think that's the thing, is what can you do with cash assets? That might be something to consider versus cashing in on the property. I also like to think, too, of opportunity costs as if you can do a buyout over time rather than having to do the lump sum. That's pretty much interest free, right? Mm-hmm. But also making sure that if you're the one getting those monthly payments, wouldn't it make you feel more comfortable having the lump sum? So yeah, you don't have to worry about if they lose their job, if they just stop paying and then you have to take them to court for contempt. Like, there's so many different things on. Yeah, it depends on what side of the coin you're on and what
always
your situation
is. One of my scenarios for my clients, of course, at a discounted rate, but a lump sum is always a calculation that's important to consider. Absolutely. Because you're free. You're not waiting on that check every month. You know, it's. I find in some cases it's about control.
Yeah.
Right? Am I going to send it on the 1st? I'm going to send it on the 10th. I've seen so many situations. And so I always like lump sum, but it's not always possible. So.
Well, and too, even going back to like how to utilize your equity with the buyout back in episode 55, we even talked about how depending on how long it would take you to finish out that buyout, it might make more sense to do the cash out refinance where that might only cost you a couple $100 more a month,
yeah,
you know, in your mortgage payment and just handle the lump sum versus paying $400 or $500 even more over a period of time. So depending on how long.
There's so many ways to look at this. I mean,
right.
We could talk about this for hours and run calculations, and they still might not agree.
That's right. Well, and I always want to emphasize that the conversations that we have here, they are broad. And the only way to really know what the best strategy for you is to individually work with the appropriate professional that can guide you based on looking at the specifics of your circumstance and listening in and doing an evaluation based on what your longer term needs and goals are. Because just because a couple might have the same mix of asset types, it doesn't mean that their values are going to be the same, nor the rules or restrictions on the withdrawal process are going to be the same. And they especially don't have the same long-term goals and needs as other individuals.
And the time value of money as well, right? The sooner I have the money, the better for me. But of course, if I'm paying it, the longer I have to pay it, the better, right? With no interest. So absolutely so many factors, but yeah, you need the right professionals, because I'll give you an example. I had a woman I worked with who, to your point, didn't look at what she agreed to on the dotted line and didn't even know where the retirement funds that she was getting as part of her share were. 2 years later, she still the qualified domestic relations order for the transfer of 401k funds had not happened. And nobody seemed concerned with that.
Everybody thinks that it's all handled right then with your attorney, but there are things that still have to be done that you need that checklist of that's post that agreement to make sure it's wrapped up.
And even sometimes the attorneys aren't familiar with this. They don't teach math in law school. And so not to speak negatively of any attorney, because some attorneys have really good financial acumen, mm-hmm. but some simply do not. And so it becomes about empowering yourself, regardless of the question, regardless of your situation. Be proactive. Take the steps. Get organized. Get a notebook for all your questions that you're going to have. And then when you're through this process and you're looking back and you're like, wow, I can't believe what I went through. And look at me.
And you made a really good point a moment ago about, you know, depending on what side of this is on, like, of course, you might want to receive the lump sum. If you're on the other side of having to pay it out, you want to give it out over time. And that the way I think of that, too, is this is why a CDFA is important. Because if you're listening to this right now and you're like, I want the best strategy for me. Like, yes, I want this to be amicable, but I don't want to leave anything on the table. I don't want to choose the wrong, quote unquote, the wrong assets. And it's just not necessarily that it's the wrong assets, but what are those options going to provide for you even beyond the divorce? Once the divorce is finalized and you've signed on the dotted line, how can you find the best mix of assets for you Well, this is where a CDFA comes in, because the CDFA is going to say, let's analyze this based on your best case scenario.
North Carolina is an equitable property state, which means fair, not necessarily equal. Now, we know that fair is a relative term during divorce. So absolutely, I am focused on my client. I will say that what I find often when it's amicable, it's because somebody is acquiescing. And frequently it is the woman who's trying to keep the peace and is agreeing to things that might not necessarily be in her best interest. And so whether I'm serving as a CDFA to my client or if I'm working with a couple as a financial neutral, my focus is on leveling the playing field of financial knowledge. And so even with a couple, sometimes you have to help one along because I can, if the law firm didn't hire me to work with a client, I can be subpoenaed. My information can be subpoenaed. So, but if the law firm has hired me to work with my client, then it falls under attorney-client privilege. Now, in the different scenario, if I'm working with a couple, they're sharing their information with me. It saves money to be amicable and to share information and try to find the best solution for everybody. Because when you aren't working towards the most fair solution, that's when legal fees go up.
Right.
That's where animosity grows. And so that is where a CDFA can help you and be a neutral party, be an objective party to help you get your documents in order, help you think through the questions you should be asking, prepare for the attorney consultation, help you organize what to ask for if you don't know what you need. So let's figure out your expenses. How do you know what your marital estate looks like? Let's do it. And then what do we divide, right? What can we look at as the best way to divide it? And then move forward with you, even in mediation, supporting the calculations as they come back and forth with the numbers and the offers and counteroffers, sitting there running the calculations. I've done it plenty with the attorney, with the client, trying to figure out the best route and in thinking unemotionally versus the client having an emotional component. It's undeniable. I mean, you can try and control it, but the reality is the reality. And so, yeah, we can work in different capacities, but it just all depends on what the need is for the client. Absolutely.
It helps keep it realistic, right? You know,
well,
because it helps cut out that emotion.
I find that my clients are better clients for their attorney. And so I love to get a client before they've even contacted an attorney. Let's figure this out. And then we have a financial workbook to put together with all the information. You take it to your attorney and the attorney wraps the law around it.
That's right.
Very efficient. You're not going back and forth. You can articulate this because you've already been through it. You've been thinking about it. Yeah, absolutely.
So as we kind of wrap up here today, Jessica, let me ask you this. For the woman who is listening today that is determined to set herself up the best that she can financially in her divorce, what is the number one thing that you want her to know?
Always have an ability to earn income. As women, I wish I could go to every bridal show and tell every soon-to-be bride, maintain an ability to earn income. Money is a medium of exchange. You can't be emotional about it, but you need it to put a roof over your head, food on the table. So you've got to protect yourself.
Mm. That's a good one. I was not expecting you to say that. I hear in that, maintain a sense of independence. And that is probably my personality, but...
No, it's so true.
Yeah.
So true.
It's the best protection long-term, not only for yourself, but for peace of mind, but also for your children if they're involved, if you've got children.
Ultimately, to me, it's about them. And the last thing I'd like to say is divorce does not define you. So... onward.
Gosh, there really is so much to think about in a divorce, and finances can make your head spin even without the added layer of divorce. But the long-term financial implications from the financial decisions that you make during this time, they are too great to not make informed choices. Aspects like tax implications, opportunity costs, dividing assets, such as your marital home, the retirement accounts, and investments. They have so many potential factors involved that it only makes sense to involve some professional guidance into your divorce strategy. No doubt, there's going to be some financial changes to your lifestyle after divorce, so it's important to do some proactive planning, enhance your financial literacy, and be prepared to consider more than just the emotional elements that are involved here. If you want to make sure that you're exploring all of your options and that you have the assurance that you're making thoughtful and informed decisions, then you might actually want to consider consulting with the various professionals that can provide that insight for you. And that does include somebody like Jessica, which, by the way, I'm linking her contact info down in the show notes for you. Because having the knowledge to make informed decisions in advance is better than in hindsight saying, "I wish I had known." Trust me, girl, it was that very phrase that kicked off this podcast. These decisions are long-lasting and often life-changing. So take your time to navigate them wisely. And of course, you know that I've got some handouts for you that's going to help begin to organize some of these finances so that you can look at them in a holistic picture. So head over to peaceofminddivorce.info, where you can sign up for free to access our full divorce resource center. The library grows weekly, and you can even browse through some of the vetted out professionals that we have in the directory for you. The link to the Peace of Mind initiative is pretty easy, peaceofminddivorce.info. But I've also got the link for you down in the show notes. Until next week, friend, I wish you an abundance of peace and determination.